Ladies and gentlemen, make way for your four hosts. There's Ross, a man so passionate that he could turn any airline feud into a full-blown Kardashian drama. Then there's Christos, the only one of our four hosts who actually knows anything about flying a plane. Then there's Tom, a man so loud that he can still be heard over the roar of a GE90 engine. And finally, the man with the news, and the only one who talks any sense, there's Nick. This is the Radio Runway Podcast.
Hello, this is a public service announcement to advise that this podcast is actually still happening. We still exist.
We do. Believe it or not, we still do exist.
We're here.
In the very minimal form that we do, but we still do exist.
That's, you know, right.
At least the two of us make the effort to show up, unlike Christos.
Yeah, and I do want to say on that, we've had a fair bit of listener support saying, Christos, where are you? We miss you. It's been a few episodes. And we apologize on Christos's behalf. The man is booked and busy.
He is booked
and busy. He's right now, in fact. He's on the tarmac, doing his job, you know, living his best monetary life, as you will.
What can you say, yeah?
Exactly. So look, we got a lot to get through this episode. We're going to talk through the insane travel history of Nick and a little bit to coming up for Ross, and I've done a little bit myself. Nick's been halfway around the world. I've been trans-Tasman. Ross has a lot booked in. It's exciting. You're going to hear all about it. Mm. We're also going to talk specifically about the SQ321 turbulence, which might I add, if you have been living under a rock, is the most talked about news segment of the month of May 2024. It's been worldwide. And there's a few other notable news items we'll talk about first. But first, let's hear from our wonderful friends at Collectors Aircraft Models Australia.
Picture this. You're new to the world of aviation. You've been drawn in by something you've experienced that fascinated you. Maybe a flight, maybe a type of aircraft, maybe an episode of Air Crash Investigations. In any case, you think you're ready to invest in aviation as an interest or a hobby, but you're not sure where to start. Luckily, there's only one logical answer. Collectors Aircraft Models Australia. They're Australia's largest outlet in die-cast, wooden-carved, and push fit aircraft models. And they don't just cover commercial flying, but also military, sport, and general aviation too. And while you might have worries as to how long you might have to wait to get the model you want, or maybe you aren't sure how reliable the model is, well, Camos source their stock from leading manufacturers from both within Australia and the world over, regularly receiving updates from manufacturers and suppliers as to what's new and being developed. Oh, and what if you spot an issue with the model you bought? Well, Calmost will replace your defective model with a fully intact one with no fuss and no extra charge. So don't wait any longer. Head into Calmost and secure your model today. 40 Cranwell Street, Braybrook. There's no reason not to.
Thank you very much to our friends at Collectors Aircraft Models Australia. Always good to have you guys on
board. Why do you thank them when it's just you making the announcement?
Well,
I'm just thanking yourself regardless.
Thank you, Tom, for those wise words of wisdom.
No, thank you, Collectors Aircraft Model, for continuing to support the podcast.
Yes,
in exactly. The very minimal form that, you know, we
currently
we output, but
exactly,
they're always there for us.
While we might not output much, they output insane amounts of incredibly high quality models.
That's correct.
And they heavily contribute to the aesthetics of my bedroom as well. So
that's right. Exactly. All right. So, Nick, you've been halfway around the bloody globe, mate. You've seen most of Europe. You've seen a lot of Europe via Asia. So you've done a lot.
Yeah, I have. I've been in the Middle East as well, which is good. So just to recap, I've been away sort of the past 3 weeks. I've taken three flights. So I've flown Melbourne to Singapore, Singapore to Dubai, Dubai to London. Do you know what that reminds me of? Do you know at the start of the Borat movie, how, you know, he's going from Kazakhstan to New York and he takes all those weird routes and you're like yeah, that's literally like me traveling to Europe this time. And I don't know, for me personally, I like shorter flights and having the opportunity to have a break and stretch my legs. That's just me personally. I know there are people out there who are like, you idiot, you know, QF9 exists from Perth and then, you know,
and diverts to Karratha. We'll talk about that later.
Oh yeah, we will. Yeah, we will. Yeah, massive fuel issues in Perth. But yeah,
yes, as continue. I said,
we will talk that. Yeah, so first flight, Melbourne to Singapore. Ironically, we will talk about the Singapore 777 a bit later, but I actually did fly on a Singapore 777-300ER.
Oh, how'd you find it?
Incredibly smooth. No turbulence whatsoever. We took off. The flight was delayed because the inbound flight, I think there was a tail swap from the original aircraft that was coming down. It must have gone, you know, tech or AOG as we call it in the industry. So it was a bit delayed on the inbound. Swissport, who no longer look after Singapore Airlines at Melbourne Airport no more, did a really good job, to be honest, of the turnaround. Turn it around within sort of an hour and 15, or something like that, which is incredibly quick for a 777-300ER, incredibly quick for an aircraft that has a capacity of just shy of 400 people. So very good job on them. Yeah, so other than the fact that it was slightly delayed, incredibly smooth flight. Got to about 10,000 feet, seatbelt sign went off, didn't go back on until we landed. And seriously, there was no bumps. We only heard that twice. Wow. Actually, no, we heard that a few times because obviously the core belt.
Yeah, true. Good point.
But yeah.
Jeez, I was saying, wow, really? No one bothered the flight attendants. Whoa.
Yeah, they will love that as well. Oh, I've got to talk about my flight from Dubai to Singapore.
Yeah.
Where there was literally, I was flying premium economy, 56 seats in premium economy. Five of them were taken and one of them was me. Literally, at one stage in that cabin, there was more crew than there was actual packs. It was
bizarre.
And in premium economy as well on the 380, because it's at the front of the main deck, you've got the three toilets at the front. So there was three toilets for five people.
Mate, how good did you test them all out?
You can't, hey, yeah, obviously.
Really? That's what you're going to ask?
Yeah.
Did any of them have windows out to the...
No, they didn't.
Not into the cabin, obviously.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's one. Can Tom, right, like, next not to... ask any more questions about your flights?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Continue.
And now we'll talk about the toilets a bit later. Let's go in chronological order here. So obviously, Singapore Airlines 777-300ER, really good flight. SQ crew in economy. Oh, my goodness. At one stage in the flight, I think it was midway through the flight, every time somebody went into the toilet, and this is an economy, by the way, this isn't even in business or first. Every time somebody went into the toilet, there'd be a cabin crew that would go in afterwards just to sanitize and wipe down the toilet.
While the people are still in there.
Yeah, that's very okay, and you talk about me not being able to ask questions. Yeah. Ross?
I think both of you guys
You're cutting that out.
Oh, no, I'm not. Oh, yes, shit. Continue. So yeah, that after every passenger. That's pretty attentive. It reminds me of like at the footy now, they have like guys that come and like sweep up inside of each like toilet stall after everyone's used the toilet stall.
It was incredible. Like I've not even seen that in business class before. That attention to detail. The food on Singapore Airlines, as per usual, is great. I would still say that the in-flight entertainment is significantly better on Emirates. I would say that ICE is better than Chris World. Sorry, Singapore Airlines, but that is fact.
And both better than the Qantas IFE. I'll tell you about that later.
We'll talk about Tom's flying because you did fly on a pretty special flight from Auckland to Sydney. Had a few days in Singapore. Then this is where the real fun started. Obviously, no, Singapore 777 is always good fun. Flew, luckily enough, to fly business class on the Emirates 380 upper deck, which is always such good fun. It is so quiet. Like the A380 itself is quiet in general, but when you're upper deck, you're even further away from those engines.
Back to reality for you, mate.
Can I ask, have you ever flown on the lower deck of an A380?
I did. I flew premium economy on the way home. On one flight. Three of them were business.
On one flight.
Jeez. I have flown economy. I've flown on the second last row, I think, of an Emirates 380 before. So not as far back as I possibly could, but I have flown pretty far back. And I think wherever you sit on a 380, except for right over the wing, you can't go wrong. And the reason why I wouldn't recommend it to Christos's demise, who insists that it's great, is because all you'll see is the wing. You won't even see like the surroundings or anything because the wing is so big. And if you look at a 380, it kind of curves up and then out. All you'll see is metal the whole way through. So if you do fly on an A380 on the main deck and you want good views out, never sit over the wing. Take it from me.
Yeah.
Please. I have been on many of them.
Dude, when the A380 lands, the wings just go nuts. I love watching it. It's like they flex like a lot. It's like watching like a gull flap in the wind. It's amazing.
Those of you at home right now, Tom is currently flapping his arms about.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like Sketch from Twitch.
Yeah.
Special play, special teams. What's up, brother?
Tuesday. Anyway, speaking of Windflex,
yes.
Maybe it's a good time now to talk about the Dreamliner that you went on, because that is the king, the undisputed king of Wingflex right now in aviation, that Dreamliner.
Yeah, I had window seats on both of the Dreamliners I went on, the Dash 8 variant with Jetstar from Melbourne to Sydney and the Dash 9 variant from Auckland to Sydney on the way back, which was the Jetstar, the QF4, the New York tag flight, the fuel stop via Auckland.
Mm.
So... it was a great experience, actually, and I'm very keen to tell you guys about it.
Well, Tom, I actually want to ask, what was your experience like on QF4 Auckland Sydney? Because I've actually booked that in...
You actually booked it? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wait.
I've booked a few flights coming up lately.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually true. We're going to get to this, folks, but let me tell you, Ross sent me an entire bloody list of flights, and that man is taking advantage of as much of the next few months as he can. He is going everywhere. He's flying a lot. I'm keen to hear all about it.
I don't blame him. It's pretty cold in Melbourne at the moment. I want to get out of here as well. So,
pretty nuts. But no, it was my brother's first time on the Dreamliner, on the 9 variant from Auckland to Sydney. He got exit row seats. He got a window so he could see out across the wing as the very occasional light turbulence flopped it about like a piece of paper being flexed in someone's hand. It was amazing. The Dreamliner is an incredible service. And Nick, I've heard you talk about this before in the past, but a JQ4 being the New York service and QF4 being the New York service and also being a single digit flight number, as I've heard you say before, should bring with it a certain level of premium, and I feel like it did. It really did.
It does. It's with all airlines. Like, you have the single-digit flight numbers. It's the flagship service. Like, you know, QF1, it's the best. It's the very best of what Qantas should be.
Yep.
EK1, it's the very best of what Emirates should be. JQ1, it's the very best of what... Well, it's the least worst of what Jetstar should be.
Oh, dude. Well, you're right, though. QF1-2. London and back via Singapore.
Yeah.
QF3-4, New York and back via Auckland.
QF5-6, Rome.
Rome back and forth via
QF7-8, Sydney-Dallas.
Sydney-Dallas.
Yeah, QF9-10,
London.
Yeah,
again, Melbourne. Via Perth.
That's going to be Axe, though.
Sorry, what's Ryanair?
Really? Melbourne,
what's Ryanair 1? I'm just Googling it. I just want to know.
Do they have a 1? Ryanair 1. Jeez.
It's probably Michael O'Leary's private charter.
Yeah.
In his Gulfstream G700.
O'Leary Force One.
Yeah, in his Gulfstream G700 or something like that.
Yeah. With no toilets because it's just too expensive to run with. So, look, Dreamliner overall, fantastic experience. Mm. And given it was my brother's first ever Dreamliner experience, he was very impressed and he felt like he was on a premium legacy carrier, which he was. The IFE was definitely lacking though. You spoke about Chris World and Ice, but Qantas' equivalent is really lacking. I mean, they got hardly any TV shows and movies and not really much else in the way of entertainment, which is a real shame, but... I was too focused looking out the window. It was a beautiful... Literally, the sun was rising as we were going on a very early morning refuel stop from Auckland to Sydney, and it was fantastic. All round, the 787s on that trip were fantastic. The 737 NGs were just woeful. Narrow body on international flights, wouldn't recommend. Hate that for anyone who has to do it.
I argue that. I would argue that.
I'm not counting Europe, obviously.
No, obviously. No, that's why I was going to ask... That's what I wasn't going to say. I was going to say, I have been to New Zealand before on a narrow body. It was an A321neo. I would recommend it highly. The A321neo is honestly I'm going to say it, maybe controversial, is probably the best narrow body in the market right now.
I agree.
I agree too.
Like the A320 family. I haven't been on the MAX, unfortunately. I wanted to go on Bonza just somewhere, but obviously they've
left
gone
too late.
You know,
they've gone Buster.
They have.
Sorry, that was awful.
Bonza is Gonza.
That's way better. Far out.
Yeah. Yeah, so oh, I guess
I'll showing up straight away.
Opportunity is to fly Virgin. And one day I will, 100%, go on the Max. Being on the 220, that's a fantastic aircraft as well. I think it's just the NG and it's done to show its age.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because the NG is
airframe.
A fantastic... Yeah, it's a 6-year-old
airframe. They need to develop a new narrow-body airframe. They really do.
How many times have we said this on the podcast?
Oh,
my goodness, it's like a broken record. Us talking about how the 737 is so old.
It is.
Anyhow...
But look, speaking of 737s, we're going to jump across to Ross. Mate... Are you traveling on any 737s in your
adventures? I'm just trying to think. You tell... Actually, yes, I am actually. So the first trip I got coming up, I have booked to go to Long Reach with my dad via Brisbane, Qantas Founders Museum.
That's on my list with my dad as well. So
it will be a 737 from Melbourne to Brisbane, then a Dash 8 from Brisbane to Long Reach and back again.
What Dash 8?
300 or 400?
Is it
probably the 400?
I think it's the 400.
Yeah.
400, yeah.
I think. That's the first one. Then the second trip I've got booked is I'm going to the Gold Coast with my family and cousins. We're going to watch the Pies absolutely take down the Suns.
Oy. Actually, my team, I was going to say survived risk. We lost to the Gold Coast last week. So bring it. I hope that Colin would bring their A game, mate.
We will, as we always do. Let's just not talk about the last couple of weeks.
Bring the A game and also A tooth.
Oh, you would go there, wouldn't you?
That's a bit far fetched, though.
Like yeah. Sorry. Continue.
So
yes.
You go on the Gold Coast and then.
And then the next day, I'm going with my mum and my sister to Queenstown.
The next day.
Damn. Yeah, the next day. So we fly back from the Gold Coast. Then the next day, we're going to Queenstown there for a couple of nights. Then we're going up to Auckland for one more night. Then QF4 from Auckland to Sydney. And then. Another I have to settle for a 737 from Sydney back to Melbourne. So
you slumming in a 737? How?
Well, that'll be slightly more comfortable than the 717 we will go on when we eventually book a day trip to Hobart.
Yeah, so that'll be good.
So you can go on the 717.
Be phantasmal, mate. That'll be good.
I have a question, not related to aviation. You said you were going to Queenstown. You've been to Queenstown earlier this year as well. When you were there, did you have a Ferg burger? Because that is, oh my God.
They were orgasmic. They're so good.
Have you had one?
I've had
a Ferg burger. I had it a month before COVID hit. I went in 2020.
Yeah.
And in January of 2020. And I'm going to be honest, I personally thought it was overrated, but that's just me.
That's just you? No,
It is just you.
There is, yeah, it's 2v1, ladies and gentlemen. If you are planning a trip to Queenstown, and if you have to have one thing in terms of like a culinary experience, 100% recommend Ferg Burger. To be honest,
Roasted kiwi is pretty good too. Sorry, endangered species. That was a joke.
For Tom just laughing at his own jokes there.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, lucky for me, I can cut that out.
Anyway. Okay, you got that. You got us there.
Anyway, going back to my stream.
Yes, continue.
That I did. So Singapore to Dubai, and then Dubai onwards to London on the Emirates 380 in business class upper deck. There's not really much else I can say other than it was just an absolutely amazing experience, as anyone would have in any form of business class, let alone, you know, on an A380 in one of the best business class products in the
and
world.
And it holds up to compared to the last time you were on it as well?
Yeah, it does. What, the 380?
Mm.
Yeah, 380 is just a fantastic aircraft to fly on.
Yeah.
It is. In terms of comfort, it's like you really notice it. It was maybe 2 months ago when I flew up to Singapore and flying back... because I booked it so late, I had to fly back through Sydney. So I did QF2 and then a 737. A QF2, which is obviously a 380 from Singapore to Sydney, and then just a 737 from Sydney back to Melbourne.
Slumming it.
And my goodness, you definitely notice the smoothness of the 380, and then you're coming back on the 737, and it's like, why does everything feel like you've got light turbulence in this?
When the 73 landed in Auckland on the Sydney Auckland Lake for me, I turned to my brother like, I think we're gonna die. It was so intense, like it just hits the ground, and how would I describe it?
Could have been user error.
Well, I mean, yeah, we've met a 737 FO. And I can say it could very much be user error when it comes to the 7.3. Love you, Mitch. I'll take that out.
Good guy, Mitch.
Do not add that. So, look, I mean, speaking of the travel industry at the moment, given that we are very much frequent customers of late, let's run through a quick couple of news articles before we jump into the black box discussion around the turbulence in the modern era and SQ321. Firstly, let's talk about how... this is something you guys might not have heard about recently, but COMAC, in conjunction with the CCP's Travel and Tourism Division, have opened up a civilian aircraft test flight center to expedite a lot of the new domestic aircraft programs so that they can get not just the C919 rolled out to non-Chinese customers, mm-hmm. but also then introduce a second COMAC type.
Yeah, the C929, which is the wide body, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that, correct me if I'm wrong, but was that the A330 competitor?
I think A330, Dreamliner, yeah. Even A350 at this stage. Yeah, the A350-900. Yeah,
And we spoke about this on the last podcast, but holistically, Chinese airframes, what they're going for, that includes the turbines, which is the big differential from the current version of COMAC, which is they have turbines from... I don't even know what company, to be honest.
Pratt & Whitney, I think.
Pratt & Whitney, yeah. That makes sense, yeah.
I think it's really interesting at the moment how COMAC have launched into the scene. And to be honest, I think for them, they couldn't have launched at a better time with all the issues that we're seeing at the moment with Boeing and their reliability and whether we can trust them in terms of a quality assurance point of view.
Yeah.
And then because of all the issues that are going on with Boeing... we're seeing all this massive backlog of orders from Airbus. You know, like the fact that it takes 10 plus years to get your hands on any aircraft from the A320 Neo family. So is this going to be a situation where airlines will sway and say, hey, you know, we've got COMAC here, which is, a proven aircraft manufacturer, and, has a lot of components from, the Western world. As I said, Pratt & Whitney engines.
Yeah.
Pratt & Whitney engines now, but I think the aim is to have everything, developed and produced in China.
Yeah.
But as of right now, the C919s that are now flying domestically within China for a few airlines.
They're known as the American C919.
Yeah, the American C919.
Oh, wow, American engines. Whoa.
I don't know. It's very interesting. What do you guys think? Do you think that, I can see COMAC going into places such as Russia, places that are heavily, obviously Russia.
I mean, China, there's unfortunately political speculation around the current... dominion of China is what limits the purchasing decisions of the Western countries. And I think that's not likely to change anytime soon. So it's likely to be countries that are allied closely with China that benefit from the COMAC type.
Exactly, because, it's embargoed at the end of the day, these places. Boeing's Airbus, they can't get the parts in. At one stage, air fleet companies couldn't even get their aircraft back.
Yeah.
From Russia because it was all embargoed. So
I'm willing to bet that like a fair whack of the current operating Russian aircraft within Russian airspace from a commercial standpoint are actually not airworthy by modern standard.
No, they would definitely not. And that'd be the same with places like, Iran and Iraq.
Yeah, Iran's president, his helicopter that crashed and killed him was not airworthy by the modern standards of that type of helicopter for 5 years.
Yeah.
How ironic.
Oh, he's been lining that one up. Oh, jeez.
But
speaking of the Arab region, we're going to jump to the next story, guys.
Yeah.
You're familiar with this one, Nick. Smooth. Riyadh Air establishes new partnership with Singapore Airlines.
Yeah, supposedly in that article that we read from Simple Flying, shout out Simple Flying, they said that Singapore Airlines is the luxurious
airline in the world.
I would say that they're very luxurious. Obviously, Singapore Airlines very luxurious. Whether they're the most luxurious airline in the world... it's hard because Qatar is pretty up there. You've got a lot. You've got a lot of competition, but no, that's really interesting. I'm kind of thinking now, is this the first kind of airline partnership that Riyadh Air have entered into? And I think this would be good for, you know, obviously it'll be good for Riyadh Air having, you know, more connections within Asia with Singapore Airlines, you know, flying into Singapore, and then, you know, your network from, you know, particularly Southeast Asia from there will be very beneficial. And I think it works as well with Singapore Airlines. Having a partner airline, now don't quote me on this, I might be wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, there is no, well, there's no Star Alliance airline that are based in the Gulf. The closest airline that we have is Egypt Air or Turkish Airlines. Both, particularly Turkish Airlines, massive route network, but not in the Gulf. It's more European sort of West Asia. So I think that'll work for them. And the question I want to ask you fellas now is Riyadh Air, obviously kind of making a name for themselves now, preparing for commercial launch in 2025 if it takes off. Excuse the pun. Saudia, the other main airline in Saudi Arabia, is a member of the SkyTeam Alliance. Now, the question I want to pose to you guys is, do you see an airline like Riyadh Air joining one of the big three alliances, or do you see them taking a more Emirates-style approach where they're picking out different airlines from different regions in the world and choosing strategically who they want to partner with and who would like benefit their own best commercial interests?
If they want to set themselves apart from their competitors, because like you said, there's no real alliance, main alliance within the Gulf, so I reckon them deciding to join an alliance might give them somewhat of a competitive advantage. But of course, joining an alliance and joining specific partnerships always have their pros and cons. So the partnership that you just mentioned with Riyadh Air and Singapore Airlines, like that could turn out to be a really positive relationship between the two airlines, but it could also turn out to be something of a really turbulent relationship given Singapore's track record lately. I think that was quite a fitting word to describe them. But
true.
I reckon if they really want to set themselves apart from the rest, I reckon joining an alliance would be the way to do it. But that's just my perspective on it. Obviously, the business advantage to whatever they decide to do will vary depending on what the airline's mindset is.
I think it makes a lot of sense if they're going to expand and become a hub and spoke similar to that of Emirates, as you said.
Yeah.
It would make a lot of sense within the Australian region and almost certainly within other regions where there's large domestic networks to fit into, to align with an airline that flies in the face of what Emirates aligned with. So like rather than Emirates with Qantas, how it is there, it would be, let's say, VA or Rex, you know, something like that. And that's like their domestic feed into Australia. That could make sense to me.
Yeah. No, it's it'd be interesting to see. I think I put it out there. I think that if Riyadh Air were to join an alliance, if they were hypothetically, I think Star Alliance would be pushing because, as I said, I don't think that Star Alliance have a key airline player in that Gulf region.
That's right.
Like it's honestly dominated by Oneworld.
We don't count Egypt Air and Star Alliance.
It's dominated by Oneworld. You have Qatar. Yeah. You have Oman Air that recently went full Oneworld.
Yeah.
You have Royal Air Maroc and you have Royal Jordanian. Four airlines within that small Gulf region that are all Oneworld. And then obviously Saudia, as I said, were SkyTeam. And then, you know, you have airlines like, you know, Emirates and Etihad that kind of make their own little partnerships.
They do.
You know, run their own game.
They can afford to not be in one. Now, I think we put that to a poll and see what the people think.
Yeah.
That'd be a good Instagram story to do, Nick.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of polls, leads me to our next story, boys. Did you see the Iberia A350 in Peru collide with a pole?
Yeah.
Collide with a light pole on the apron. Now, look, it's a small story. Nothing else to it other than that, boys. But for the listeners at home.
That was smooth. These transitions today are smooth.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So, look, there is a video of the collision. There is a video of it hitting the light pole.
Yeah, right.
It's the winglet, the sharklet specifically. I'll put it up on the Instagram for everyone to see.
Yeah.
So they can see the chaos that ensued in Peru. Sort of emulates the vibe of that that Qatar 777 freighter in Chicago back in the day. That
yeah, that literally the wing. Pierced the. Yeah, it's crazy how it happens, but
it is. Yeah. It is. And look, makes for a very turbulent time, I guess, in Peru. And speaking of turbulence, we are now going to jump into the most turbulent story of the month of May in 2024, which is SQ321, which made headlines around the world after a very, very severe turbulence incident. So let's jump into the black box discussion.
Black box.
I can start us off.
Ross, you numpty. For those who are wondering, we all thought Ross was going to be giving us the info package. Turns out he's not. So we go to Nick. And then Ross jumps in with that. Well, let me begin.
Oh, I just wanted to get a reaction out of Tom. That's all.
Nick, take us through it.
Yeah. So obviously, we're all aware, well, most of us are aware that have access to any form of news or internet about SQ321. This was an aircraft that was flying from London to Singapore and over the Irrawaddy Basin. Apologies if I haven't said that correctly, which is over Myanmar, a kind of section over the Bay of Bengal. It experienced categorically severe turbulence, injuring, I believe it was, 71 passengers. And unfortunately, one passenger, age 73, died from that particular incident. I just want to add as well that the passenger died from a heart attack. It wasn't a direct correlation. It wasn't like, you know, he hit his head on the roof and, you know, hit the wrong spot and he passed away. He did die from a heart attack. We don't have that particular information, and I don't think we ever will. But my belief is that the shock of obviously that,
yeah,
you know, it that severe turbulence, yeah, heightened the anxiety to the point of the fact that he went into cardiac arrest and unfortunately passed away. That wasn't good. What I do want to say as well is I just want to commend the proactiveness and the professionalism of the SQ crew throughout this situation. Because bear in mind, this is an unforeseen circumstance. We'll get into the different types of turbulence a bit later, and we'll talk about CAT turbulence, clear air turbulence, which is the type of turbulence that this aircraft encountered, which obviously, as said in the name, clear air. We can't see it on radar, unfortunately. But I just want to talk about the proactiveness of not only the crew in that were operating that flight, but just Singapore Airlines in general. If you look at Singapore Airlines' Facebook page, you can still see updates on their actual Facebook page quite regularly, like sort of every few hours, saying, you know, this is the situation of SQ321. There are still 20 passengers in hospital from Bangkok. There have been 5 passengers that have flown back to Singapore, or five, you know, they've gone back to their original. Yeah. But as well as that, I think the captain or the first officer, whoever was flying the aircraft, made the right call. They were flying over Myanmar. They went, obviously, the first thing that they did was they descended 6,000 feet. Now, this is the one thing that sort of griped me. In the first day or so, you'd hear the news outlets that were saying the aircraft dropped 6,000 feet in 3 minutes. Yeah. And the reality is that scaremongering, because aircraft on normal rate of descent can do anywhere up to about 3,000 feet per minute.
Yeah.
So 6,000 over 3 is 2,000 feet per minute. And that is not, you know, that's not because of the it is because of the turbulence, but it's because of the turbulence. It's the pilot's reaction to the actual turbulence. There is, you know, I think the aircraft was at 37 or 39,000 feet. There's a lot of turbulence out here. Let's lower ourselves now to an altitude where there is less turbulence at 31,000 feet. So that's exactly what they did. They lowered themselves. It was a controlled approach down 2,000 feet per minute to about 31,000 feet. They squawked 8,800, and they landed.
Is it 7700?
Yeah, 7700. So my bad.
I was about to say, damn, we're making up new emergency codes now.
Sorry, my bad. Right. But the point it is 7700.
The point is that the captain and the flight deck, they made a calculated decision under critical amounts of pressure to lower the aircraft to a lower altitude so that it was out of danger of the cat turbulence that was occurring.
I just want to add as well, when you say out of danger, the biggest danger that was there was the passengers. All right, if you weren't strapped in or whatever, you yourself was the biggest danger of getting injured. The actual aircraft itself, like obviously we saw the photos of all the interior paneling being, all the ceiling panels and that sort of stuff being ripped off, and you know, you can see the oxygen mask.
That was purely as a result of passengers and unrestrained items being thrown across the aircraft.
But like I just want to say
I did not know that
the structural integrity of that aircraft, that 777, was fine. That aircraft can take so much more.
Oh yeah.
Than that flight endured in terms of turbulence. The structural integrity of that aircraft is good. So what I want to reiterate here is that as bad as this turbulence was, and it was bad, it dropped, I think the data showed that it dropped about sort of 154 feet at the end, which is
about 57 meters it dropped. That was the initial drop.
Which is massive. And they were pulling, you know, the initial drop, they went from, you know, sort of positive 1.5 G down to negative 1.5 G. They were pulling some, you know, they're pulling some fairly, you know, big G for, you know, common people like us, you know, F1 drivers, you know, they pull 5-6 G in the corners, yeah, and that sort of stuff. But yeah, but for regular people, 3-4 G is a lot, you know, and it's a big strain. And obviously if you don't have your seatbelt fastened, you know, it'll make you go flying, excuse the pun. But
oh, there it is.
So just to clarify, that panel at the top, sorry Ross, that's a panel in the galley that came loose. Was that as a result of a flight attendant hitting the ceiling?
It could have been the result of, I don't know what the circumstances were of that particular panel, but because they said that the extreme turbulence event happened when they were commencing their breakfast service, because it was towards the end of the flight.
It was towards the end of the flight. Obviously,
hour and a half. Yeah. They were commencing their breakfast service. So naturally, what would the galley look like at a time like that? There'd be trays everywhere. They'd have the full-on trolleys out.
And
so,
after the turbulence, it'd probably look pretty scrambled.
I think everyone was a bit scrambled after that.
You'd be livid if you go for the poached eggs.
Oh, mate. Clearly you'd someone be wearing it after.
Clearly someone ordered the Singapore sling real life.
Oh, gee.
All right, but let's just get back down to earth here. This incident happened.
Bangkok, to be precise, which is where the plane ended up.
Okay, so this aircraft was a Boeing 777. Sorry, Boeing 777.
Boeing 777. He doesn't have these written down, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. These are all off the cuff.
Oh, no, I've actually got a few of them written down.
Okay, he literally has written
every
down.
Of those.
I take him back. Okay, continue, Mr. Boeing 777.
Ever read some of those?
Come on, yeah, Nick. Oblige. Let's go.
No, I'm not going to read them out. It's his.
No. I'm not going to say them.
Okay. So anyway, yes, you were talking about this Boeing 777. The result after the turbulence. How did this situation calm immediately after the turbulence? Is that what you were going to talk about?
So I was going to say the result. Nick was saying that the aircraft was structurally sound. On the interior, it's all a cosmetic look. You don't want to be looking at just the sheer external shell of the aircraft. It's all cosmetic because that would not be stopping the aircraft from depressurizing. It's all the external stuff that you do not see from the interior of the aircraft. So all the paneling that was damaged or removed, or even like the oxygen mask that you saw that were dropped from the compartments overhead, it was largely like 99% as a result of people, objects, trolleys in the galley, other equipment that was not restrained, because let's face it, when the seatbelt sign isn't turned on, a lot of things aren't restrained. And when you have a severe turbulence event like that, when the aircraft suddenly drops and stuff is being flown around, then naturally you are going to get shit hitting the roof, literally. Like,
it's true.
Probably shouldn't have sworn there, but you know.
I just want to make note as well. Did mention this, you know, the particular location of where this turbulence happened. Now,
in the sky.
Obviously, but I just want to say as well, it was obviously, I did say it was Myanmar, particularly the Bay of Bengal at this point in sort of, at this time in particular, where there is a lot of tropical climates. You're looking at India going into their monsoon season. So generally speaking, if you're flying over that, you know, that region right now, particularly a lot of Aussies that are going over to Europe, you're more than likely going to experience some form of turbulence. So I'm not going to say, you know, severe turbulence like that aircraft encountered, but you know, you're going to experience, you're more likely to experience turbulence now than you would a bit later.
I agree. And also on that, I think, like you said, Singapore's been giving all those updates, right?
Yeah, they've been giving all these updates. Yeah, it's they've been very proactive.
I was going to say with that, right? IATA has already released all of their reports, and because Singapore was so thorough and transparent in everything that had happened, there was not really too much more to learn about the incident from IATA's report, from what Singapore had already made public information.
Yeah,
I mean, credit to their comms team, man. Honestly.
They made a lot of things public.
Yeah.
I mean, within the first 48 hours, we knew the rundown of the passengers in terms of where they were from, you know, or just a lot of the information that didn't really need to be shared got shared. I mean, this isn't a breach of privacy by any means,
no. But
there was a lot of detailed information, like, you know, there was information like, you know, there was 80 Aussies on board, there were 70 British people on board, there were, you know, very, you know, 20 Singaporeans on board, 10 Indians, you know, breakdown of all the passengers, and it was very professionally done by Singapore Airlines. Look, a lot of the news articles, they went into a bit of a spiral. They used it to as a platform to blame Boeing, because obviously it was a Boeing aircraft. It has nothing
what
to do with...
What a fearmonger, which the news obviously loves to do.
They do. And that's what I was saying originally, though, about that 6,000 feet. Realistically, I mean, obviously, newsflash, every aircraft drops 39,000 feet.
Yeah, literally. It's part of the mandate of news a flash.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Speaking of newsflash... For those listening in Australia, you'll be familiar with one of our flagship news outlets, Channel 7. And when they broke this story from the Australian shores of the Singapore turbulence incident, we, as we've discussed in this story, we know that the flight was a 777-300ER, right? You want to take a guess which aircraft they ran as the graphic?
737 MAX, probably.
Oh, no.
Right?
Cessna 150.
Oh, no.
What was it?
A350-900, my friend. Yeah.
Did they at least get the airline right?
They did.
Okay, well, to start.
Scoot, no.
They don't even operate, and they're probably like, oh, yeah. Painted it on. I think it took them about a day and a half to start saying, this was a Boeing aircraft. And that, and in the situation right now of where Boeing is right now, they're at rock bottom when it comes to public image.
Yeah.
And it was just more of a reason for news companies and outlets to profit on the whole fact that Boeing is just not doing so well at the moment in terms of quality assurance, in terms of, you know, fulfilling their, you know, promises, they're fulfilling their deliveries with, you know, the Dreamliner, the 777X, you know, the 737 MAX 9 and 10. But I just want to make it clear on the podcast that this is nothing to do with Boeing. This could have happened to any airline.
Exhibit A Qatar a few days later.
Yeah, which...
Not as extreme,
Which also was a Boeing. It was a 787.
Okay, maybe let's not say that.
More of a nightmare liner, that one.
But no, there was a Turkish Airlines A321 a few days later where a crew member actually did break their back because of severe turbulence. So there was three major... turbulence. I mean, obviously, SQ321 was the big ticket item, but then from that, because turbulence was such a big thing in the news, I think it became a thing where everyone was just, you know, we saw severe turbulence and then, you know, you report it straight away. But I just want to say as well that this type of turbulence
could have happened to any aircraft.
It could have happened to any aircraft. It could have happened to any airline. And I just want to say as well, it's incredibly rare. that this thing would happen. Yep. I just want to say as well, but between the three of us, obviously, as leisure travelers, we do travel quite often.
Yeah.
And we all experience turbulence.
We all experience turbulence. And touch wood, obviously, I wouldn't want this particular type of turbulence to happen.
I suppose we're talking more severe turbulence, like, is very rare.
Yeah. Mild turbulence is more or less just, expect it.
Yeah.
We're going to get mild turbulence. That's not really an issue. Even mild turbulence, you can still walk around the aircraft.
Yeah.
You're more likely, the most severe turbulence that most people will encounter will be, just a bit of moderate chop. And usually that sort of turbulence anyway doesn't last that long. It's the seatbelt sign that is on for a few minutes, and then, you clear that sort of, air, and then, so you're back to clear skies and you can walk around the aircraft, Obviously, if you're sat in your seat, I highly recommend, even before this turbulence story occurred, always have your seatbelt loosely fastened, because if you do, it significantly reduces the likelihood that, if this type of turbulence does occur, that you hit your head on the wall, you injure yourself, as passengers, we do have a seatbelt and it's there for a reason.
Yeah.
Nick, can I ask, in the wake of SQ321, it's a type of turbulence, by the way.
Yeah.
When you were flying home from Singapore to Melbourne.
Yeah.
Were there any precautions that you feel that the crew took after this had occurred?
It's a really good question. I did want to raise this up because I did fly SQ yesterday morning into Melbourne, and obviously this was after the instance of SQ321, and they did publicize SQ that they would be changing the way that they operate their service. They said that when the seatbelt sign goes on, they will be suspending all meal service, all service in general.
Yeah, right.
They said hot meal and hot drink service. But on my flight, it was all service.
Yeah.
Because we had a few patches of turbulence on the way home. Nothing major. It was kind of mild turbulence going on moderate. But in those situations, the seatbelt sign went on. Immediately, what the cabin crew did is, if they had, a trolley, they secured it, they locked up all the bathrooms, and they sat in their seat. They went straight to their seat. Because
yeah.
You know how when you're flying on a plane, you have the seatbelt sign that goes on for, us passengers, but then you'll have the crew that are still walking around,
even though
that the seatbelt sign is on. Once that seatbelt sign went on, it's stay seated for everyone. Usually, though, on most airlines, it's the seatbelt sign goes on, the passengers stay seated, but the crew can still walk around until the pilots say, crew, please be seated. Once that seatbelt sign went on, everyone was seated. Like, it's crazy how serious now that they are taking these precautions.
And they come in on an in-taps, the internal notice to pilots and crew.
It has changed significantly. I think the biggest thing for me, though, is whether this this new sort of rule that they've brought into play will actually last, or whether it's kind of like a reactionary sort of thing. And I don't think it will, because if you think of the shorter flights that SQ do, obviously SQ is a premium airline. They're a full service carrier. So even if you fly not low cost. Even if you fly short haul from, say Singapore to Bangkok, an hour and a half, 2 hour flight. There are instances where you can fly 1.5 hour, 2 hour flight to Bangkok, particularly this time of year, where the sky, the skies are a bit more turbulent around that region, where it'll be turbulent for the whole flight and the seatbelt sign will be on the whole flight. Does that mean, though, that, because the seatbelt sign is on, the passengers who have paid, a lot of money to be on SQ, even in economy, SQ is not cheap.
Yeah.
They won't get any form of meal service. How will that reflect on the public's perception of the airline? If you've paid top dollar and you've received the same level of service as you have Scoot.
Yeah, it impacts the overall level of service that can be provided if the flight attendants are required to be to stay seated for more than usual.
Correct.
Based on their current ability to serve passengers.
So that brings up the topic of compensation. So if you aren't receiving the full service that you had paid for, if you were flying from Singapore to Bangkok, let's say, for example, and you selectively chose Singapore Airlines of all the options that you had available purely because of their service and they are the most premium airline offering that route, and you're not getting your meal service because the seatbelt sign has been on for the entire flight, would you say Singapore Airlines would offer some form of compensation or some form of apology because of that particular instance?
You're going to tell us that
it's hard.
We're going to let air pressure control how much money customers are deserved?
Yeah, it's hard though. It is hard, but you know, I want to talk about, you know, let's bring our eyes to something like, you know, what goes on in Europe on a, you know, on virtually a daily basis. You know, we talk about Michael O'Leary. Talking about, you know, the French ATC, when they go on strike, there is no overflight over France, which does severely affect the Ryanair operation, particularly, you know, if you're a British citizen that wants to go down for a Spanish holiday. You know,
how do you get fewer people queuing to go to the toilet? Charge them.
Well, that's it. That's Michael O'Leary. And, you know, obviously Spain is a massive holiday destination for the Brits. You know, they just want to enjoy the sun. And if they go, you know, on Ryanair and French ATC having a strike, they can't overfly France, which means that it's very hard to get down. But what that means as well is if they can't fly down to France, the flight's getting delayed or either cancelled. And then Ryanair, who it is no fault of their own through EU 261, have to compensate these passengers. So yeah, through true. No fault of their own, they're having to compensate passengers for a fault that's out of their control.
Isn't that nuts? But again, aviation regulatory space is something that's continually, forever evolving, and it will change again, and in a way that accommodates the airlines in some way, in special circumstances such as that. Obviously, it doesn't benefit them currently. You in the US market, it's the same. In terms of like the refund laws or the compensation laws for passengers is very much tightening in favor of the consumer over there. It's huge new rollouts taking place federally and at a state level as well there. So it is forever an emerging space, and who knows? I there's a chance that turbulence, I guess, could come into, or at least a discussion around how turbulence should fit into the aviation regulatory space from a consumer standpoint, that should be generated from this, I think.
I think so, because it's interesting, because you look at it one way, what passengers want, but at the end of the day, I strongly believe it's safety that takes priority over anything else. Safety is paramount.
Completely agree.
At the end of the day, when this is me personally, when I book a flight, regardless of whether I book Jetstar or Qantas, my main priority on booking the flight is simply getting from point A to point B.
Yep.
The secondary part of it is how much, you know, luxury I get. You know, if I book Jetstar from Melbourne to Sydney, really all I'm expecting is a seat. If I'm booking Qantas, I'm expecting, you know, bit of travel, a bit of bag allowance, and a small meal on board. You know, it's the luxury. But at the end of the day, it's transport, getting from point A to point B in the safest form possible. And I think safety is paramount. It must be number one, regardless of what airline you're flying, what class that you're flying in. Yeah, it's bad because sometimes people do pay a lot more if you're flying first class, business class. But safety has to be number one.
Agreed.
That's how I see it.
Agreed.
I haven't looked at it lately, but I'm just reflecting on the flight that we went on from Canberra to Melbourne on the A220, trying out their business class product. Mm-hmm. So that is a 45 minute flight, whatever it was.
Yeah, about that. That was a smooth flight.
Smooth flight. But that comes down to the idea of when people book a flight like that in business class, like, I don't know how much this would cost, but how much would a Qantas business class seat cost from Canberra to Melbourne? Because that would be a very short window for the flight attendants to complete their service. Mm-hmm. If there is strong turbulence during that time, that could be a flight where no service has happened on the flight. I'm pretty sure that's happened before, especially when a strong cold front moves through. So knowing, I suppose regular people would not want to pay the extra, however much it would cost to go from to fly in economy to business if they know the in-flight service wasn't going to be there. Even though it's only a 40-minute flight, I don't think it would be a good financial idea to fly in business on that sort of flight. But what I'm trying to get at is, like, would that make the difference whether or not you get a meal on the flight or whether or not, like, you're just paying for the comfy seat? Like, how do you guys see that sort of point of view?
Look, I always see safety as paramount. If it's severe turbulence, if it's, you know, even moderate turbulence, to be honest, because I have walked through an aircraft during moderate turbulence, and let me tell you, it's hard enough walking in moderate turbulence. You know, obviously I was in the bathroom walking back to my seat to, you know, buckle up. I wasn't doing anything stupid.
Yeah, you were midstream and the turbulence starts.
I'm trying to say, it's hard when that happens, all right? And you both know it.
Wait, it's hard when that? Jeez, no, that makes it even worse. Oh my god!
When you're midstream and there's turbulence and you're trying to make sure it gets in the bowl.
My gosh, that's an omission, isn't it?
Yeah, as I was saying, like,
3 points of contact.
3 points of contact.
Or if it's a small plane, just use your head to lean on the wall in front of you.
Yeah. 3 points of contact. Oh, my gosh.
No, as I was saying, like, you know, actually just walking through the aircraft during moderate turbulence is actually quite challenging. And let alone cabin crew that have to, obviously, A, walk through the aircraft, and B, actually serve the meals, pour the drinks, actually put the meal on the tray table.
Don't envy them.
You know what? You can't do it, and you can't. Well, maybe they can. Maybe I can't because I'm just very uncoordinated, to be honest. But
self admission.
But yeah, for me, it's as I said before, it's all about safety. Safety has to be number one. And you know what? You can complain all you want, but did you get to your destination safe? Yes or no? If you did, you've fulfilled. If you fly in business class, I'd say you've fulfilled 70% of, you know, the reason why you fly anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
I you know, I do not take mercy to those who are, you know, going to complain about, you know, oh, I didn't get my steak.
And beef cheek.
I have a beef cheek.
I did actually get a beef cheek on the way home from London to Dubai, and it was delicious.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up the topic of SQ321. If anyone has any questions directly to us, or even to First Officer Mitch Hutchinson from back in season one.
Yeah, or Andy.
Please let us know. We can pass it on to them and get an answer back. We can also answer any questions you have for us directly. We'd love to hear from you when it comes to a turbulence on the SQ321 or across the world. Have you got a bad turbulence story that you want us to share on the air?
Boys, I've got a game show to finish to round it out.
Cool.
Not too long.
And not too confident.
I think it favors equally both of you.
Okay.
Ross thinks this is going to be a whitewash, and Nicholas will take it away.
I always come into this nervous, you know.
Yeah.
I always come into this nervous.
Tonight's game show is called Who Did It First? The basic premise of the game is I'm going to feed you three different questions for three different aircraft types, and you have to tell me, of two carriers, which one was delivered an aircraft of that type first.
Okay. Is this an individual question or we have to buzz in for it?
You can both answer and it's not going to be a competition as to who answers first.
Okay.
I'm going to keep tally down the bottom and then basically at the end we'll have an outright winner.
Do you need a pen and paper for it? Or?
Yeah, sure. That actually could be handy. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. All right.
Ross's joke book is actually being used for good use.
For good use. Hey,
at that last one there was so good.
Yeah. Do you want me to read that one out?
Tom, I'll let you read it out.
Yeah. Just
actually, Nick, read it. Nick, you read it out.
Damn, girl. Is your name Turbulence? Because I want to shake on top of you for 30 seconds and make you nauseous.
I wanted Nick to read that out so he can make it as a sound bite.
I still can, to be honest. All right. Okay.
I was actually planning that with Christos as well. He said it wasn't going to work.
Okay. So there are 9 questions with a double points deal breaker at the end if we get to that point. All right. Let's roll.
Let's do this.
So name as a buzzer?
No buzzer.
We'll both.
You both give an answer. I'll tell you the answer at the end and then we'll tally up who got the most correct at the end.
Okay. Done.
Okay.
All right. Done. Okay.
Good luck.
Here we go. Change up the music this time. First question. We're covering the A321neo. Out of the fallen two carriers, which do you believe took delivery of the A321neo first? The first A321neo to that airline.
Okay.
Jet 2 or Jetstar?
Jet 2.
I'm going to say Jetstar.
Okay. Ross? Jet 2 took delivery of their first A321 on the 10th of May 2023. Jetstar took delivery of their first A321neo on the 1st of August 2022.
Oh, hey. So Ross wins.
Oh, don't right. do that to me, Tom, honestly.
Question one is done. Question two.
Yeah.
American Airlines and China Southern Airlines.
Is it still for the A3?
Still for the A320. Three questions for each type.
Oh, oh God, there's a
American lot. Airlines versus China Southern. Who took delivery of the A321neo first?
I'm going to say American Airlines.
I'm going to say China Southern.
Okay. American Airlines took delivery of their first A321neo on February of 2019. China Southern took delivery of their first A321neo in March of 2018. Nick gets the points. All right, we're here with question three. Indigo versus Wizz Air. Who was the first?
Indigo.
Indigo?
Indigo. I'm going to say Indigo.
I'm still going to take the different answer and say Wizz Air.
Wizz Air, okay. On the 28th of December 2018, Indigo took delivery of their first A321neo. On the 7th of March 2019, Wizz Air took delivery of their first. So Nick edges it out.
Indigo have been famously known for having a lot of engine issues with their 321neos, particularly Pratt & Whitney engines.
Yes, yes. They have taken the lesser to court over some of them.
They have, yeah.
All right, the next type is the 777-300ER. Speaking of SQ321, here we go.
Oh, okay. Shit.
3, 2, 1. Air Canada. Air Canada versus Air China.
Air Canada.
I think it is Air Canada, actually.
You're both correct on that one. Yeah. That's 1 point each. Question two. Air France versus United Airlines.
Air France. I know this is right as well.
Well, upon reflection, I'm going to have to say Air France.
Yeah, it is Air France. Air France were the actually only launch customer of the 777-300ER. Mm.
United were incredibly late to get the 777-300.
They were. 2016.
Yeah, United were
incredibly late. Versus 2004 late. Yeah. For the launch.
Yeah.
Nuts. Question three. Battle of the Titans here. Mm-hmm. Etihad versus Qatar Airways.
I'm going to say QR.
Are you saying QR?
Yeah, Qatar.
What are you saying?
I think I'll say Qatar as well.
Okay. So Qatar took delivery of their first 777-300 on November 2007. Etihad in January of 2006.
Oh, both
wrong. Final type. Nick ahead by 1 point. Three questions to go. Double point tiebreaker at the end if necessary, okay? Yep. We're coming in here and it's going to be first question. A380... First question, Qantas versus Emirates. Same year, 2008.
Qantas.
See, I am leaning towards Qantas, but I kind of want to differentiate.
You want to make
Nick.
It? Oh, yeah, because you want to make up the points. Okay. So you're saying Emirates.
Then again, I'm probably going to shoot myself in the foot. All right. I genuinely think Qantas, but for the sake of the game, I'm just going to say Emirates.
Emirates? Okay. Qantas was delivered... Their first one was delivered the September of 2008. It's pretty late in the year.
Ooh.
Emirates was delivered in July. Ross gets the point.
Oi! He took a risk and it worked.
I know.
We're even now, aren't we?
Question
we
two. Now, this one, again, tight on this one. China Southern versus Korean Air. Both first delivery in the year 2011. You tell me which one.
I'm just a Korean.
Oh. Korean China Southern. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be defining leaders. It's going to be Nick or Ross here.
Yeah.
Okay. China Southern took delivery in October of 2011. Again, pretty late in the year.
Yeah. Nah, I cooked it.
Nah. Korean Air, though. May of 2011. Ross takes the lead.
Woo! So either Ross wins.
Or it's the double point tiebreaker.
It's a double point tiebreaker.
Okay. First delivery. Battle of the Titans again. We're going Etihad versus Qatar once again. Both again, the year 2012.
I can say Qatar.
You're saying Etihad?
I'll say Qatar as well.
Okay. Qatar, September of 2012.
Nah.
Really late in the year.
Yeah, but it's the same answer as Nick.
It's the same answer as mine.
Etihad was December of 2012. So you're both right about that one.
Sorry, Nick. That was purely strategic there. Okay. I agreed with you.
We're going into the tiebreaker here. And currently Ross is on five. Nick is on four.
I was... What?
This is for double points. This it's 1 point, isn't
Wasn't
it?
I ahead of Nick by one?
Yeah. And it's a double point question. If you both get this right, you still win.
Yeah, so I'll just have to agree with Nick and then I win.
I'm
going to let him answer first.
Okay. That's a good way of doing it.
I don't like first. This.
Okay. Double points question. 747-8 variant.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Here we go.
In honor of the two remaining passenger flight carriers, commercial flight carriers of the type of Lufthansa versus Air China.
Before I answer, I just want to say I do not have any idea whatsoever.
One was 2012, one was 2014. So they're 2 years apart. Still pretty close. It's for the Dash 8 variant. For context, obviously both prolific users of the 747.
You're just going to go the opposite of whatever I say now.
I am.
I'm probably going to say Lufthansa.
Air China then.
Okay. Boys, for you today, I can tell you that in May of 2012, Lufthansa took delivery of their first 747-8.
I knew it was Lufthansa as well. That's the bad thing. I knew it was Lufthansa.
And that, my friends, takes Ross into the champion seat for the first edition of Who Did It First. What do you guys think of the show of the game?
I'm so emotional now. This is such an emotional
game. Do you know what? That was a really good game.
Yeah.
A really tight one. Like that, those really tight ones that you had, particularly with the 380, they were so close.
Yeah. And I in particular got ones that had the same delivery year to make it interesting.
Yeah.
This is the greatest day of my life. Like, honestly, like.
Someone finally beat Nick in a game.
Yeah, I know. I want to frame this moment.
No, it was close. It was really close.
It's good.
It was a good game. I liked it.
It was good. I think it's been a fantastic episode, boys. Thank you for just joining in discussion. It's been fantastic.
Thank you very much. Until next time.
Yeah. Catch you later.
Goodbye.
Bye.